Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we make time for Toski as we welcome the man, the myth, and the legend, the one and only Bob Toski. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. Hope everybody is having a wonderful 4th of July weekend. We couldn't think of any bigger American, any American that we appreciate more than this hour's guest. He has been serving our country, and then he's been serving our country from the links, and he still continues to serve our country as he approaches the age of 100. Not just yet, but we welcome a regular contributor, a guy who was worldly, a worldly man, a guy who was renowned in the likes of Japan and other places around the world. It is the one and only Bob Toski. Bob, thanks for making time to come on the show. I know you say I'm going to come on anyway, but I always appreciate spending time with you.
I enjoy spending time with you and trying to talk about golf and life and educate people.
Well, you've been doing that for a long time, Bob. I mean, it never continues to amaze me how you keep giving and giving, and you never seem to tire of it, any of it.
Well, I love to do it, and I think I have something to offer, and I've had a lot of experience at being taught how to remember things. If I didn't, I got my butt whipped. So I've had pretty good training, Keith.
Yeah, I will tell you, you remember things. And, well, of course, nobody's around. Bob is the last living link, as we say, to the greats of the game that are no longer with us. So anything that Bob says has to be fact because there's nobody here to contend. So, you know.
That's an easy way out, Keith.
And Bob never takes the easy way out. So, everything you hear, on this program is true and factual, and especially if it comes from the mouth of the babe, the mouse, the mighty mouse, so named by Sam Snead, that one Bob Toski. So the life you've lived, and we talked about it, and I'm not necessarily going to delve into it too much this hour because we have a lot of shows yet to do throughout the years coming up. I did that intentionally. But, you know, you have had this miraculous life that you've talked about, and going from aspiring golfer and working with your brother Jack, you know, very tight-knit Polish family trying to make their way in Massachusetts to success on the PGA Tour and on to leading money winner on the PGA Tour, and then saying, hey, I'm raising a family. I have to give all this back and start golf instruction. And I know when that, I'm not sure what you called it, if it was golf instruction or you'll tell me and the gang in a second here. But when you, one of the first people to do something, when you're a pioneer, so to speak, as the term is used, people look at you sideways, upside down, and backwards as well.
Well, people are always going to judge you. You know that. We live in a world of judgment, but the first thing we should do is judge ourselves and throw the first stone at yourself and not be too critical or try to teach people what you think you know and what you feel and what you do. And I believe that you should live and let live, but if you're going to teach fundamentals, teach love and teach respect and teach discipline, those are all parts of the learning of life. And that's not any different in golf, because golf is a game of acceleration, pronation, supination, you can name them all. And the timing and the rhythm and the balance and the speed and the angle of the club coming back to the ball square is a phenomenon to a lot of people that are trying to do that. And I've always had a feeling that many are called and few are chosen to become what we are in this sport, and I'm glad I'm one of them.
Yeah, you do seem to be one of those people, and you used a lot of nations in there, and pronation and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you are have lived a long life. You've lived, like, multiple lives. When I look at Bob Tasky, my friend, and really, really close friend, I see a man of many. So you're a man of the people, yes. But then I see, well, he did this. He served our country. And then he went and he played at the highest level on the golf course. And then he took that knowledge and he shared it with the masses and on. So those three compartmental things are one thing, but then it's multi-layered beyond that as well.
Well, I believe that it all starts with the word love. I love to play golf, and I love to compete, and I love to try to win. And that was a part of my life as a Polish kid. You know, I won in high school. I won in service. I was winning all the time. And when I went on a tour in 48, I found out that winning on the big tour was not easy. It took a lot of determination, and if you don't believe, you won't achieve. But I still believe, even though I went broke twice. And I'm proud of the fact that I survived and did what my body has done that no one else will do, because I was 118 pounds, and the truth of the matter is, I'll go down in history as pound for pound one of the longest drivers for my size, and to compete and win like I did and then give up the game. I don't regret it, but I'm proud and happy that I did it. And I think the most important part of that was when I started teaching was raising a family. And I found out that was a difficult job, because children are hard to discipline. Everybody wants to be independent. And being independent is one thing, but you got to understand that there's a price for that. And the price is to be able to see yourself as a person and carry yourself like a gentleman and find a goal in life and try to produce that goal that you're trying to achieve. And that's what life's all about, Keith. It's that simple, but we're trying to make it very complex today. I went down to this golf shop the other day, and I went inside, and they had more technical ways of teaching golf than you could imagine. I thought the equipment that they had, they were trying to, I got the feeling, Keith, that they're trying to get a golfer to become better by technology and better shafts and better grips and better club heads. And the technology that I had witnessed and the teaching of the way golf is taught now, I walked away and said to myself, whatever happened to hands-on teaching and teaching with a good hand-eye coordination, and the eyes must conceive, the mind receives, and the body reacts? And There's no substitute, it never has been, for one-on-one instruction. And I'm sorry.
But I'm just saying that there is, you know, that's gone away from that. It's all about the quick fix. Right? What can I do to enhance my already near illegal equipment, you know, according to the USGA, you are riding right against that ERC line or whatever technology they want to use for whether it's the ball or the clubs or whatever, and that's where we're at in this game. That's where the industry is in a good place, only from the standpoint that a lot of people are playing golf. So you have to buy balls, right? So because people, especially as they're learning the game, they lose more than they find. So certain things, and you have to get clubs to be able to play and things like that. But as far as the difference between a driver from 5 years ago and a driver from now, you know, marginal differences, but the industry has to get you to buy into the fact that it's better, and that betterness will get you, you know, better play. Even the late Ely Callaway, who told me on this show, basically, but he told me numerous times, Keith, I only need the golfer to hit one good golf shot. And I'm like, Mr. Callaway, what are you talking about? I need at least three or four around easily to make me, you know, I mean, I'm into the game, so I'm going to play anyway. But one golf shot, how's that? And he's like, it just works. And then we've seen the evolution of what has happened with the golf clubs. And even Jack Nicklaus has said, hey, at one point in my career, I was hitting as long or longer than I was when I was considerably younger. So this is what we're dealing with, Bob, and nobody wants to put the time in anymore.
Well, you said something very important, Keith. You said the quick fix. There's no such thing in golf as a quick fix. When you're teaching touch and feel and control of speed and angles, one-on-one, if you look at back at golf, back in the history of the game, you take like Stuart Maiden that taught Bobby Jones, and then you had Armour and Cotton and all these great players and teachers. Today they teach golf in a sense and a word that confuses me. Let me ask you a question while we're on the air, okay?
Go ahead.
What do you think is the most important word in golf? One word.
The most important word? I don't think I've ever been posed that question before. Leave it to Toski to come up and try to stump me on this one. Just one word. Not hand-eye, or no combination of words.
If you saw me swing a golf club, would you tell me I had a...
Rhythm.
No, would you tell me I had... No, if you see... the word was... when you watch a person swing a golf club and they do all the fundamental things right, the word is... he has a beautiful golf swing.
Ah, beautiful? Okay.
Now, the word swing is the most important word, because most people don't swing the club, and when they do try to swing it, they can't time it, they can't coordinate their body, and they can't make good contact. So they lack athleticism, and I don't know if any R&D can solve that problem.
Well, that's, you know, but that's what the industry wants you to try to buy into. That's where that's
well,
at.
Well, I
you know,
understand that. That's going back to the quick fix, though.
Yeah, exactly right. As we're with Bob Toski this hour, there's no quick fix in him. He's been going at it for a long, long time. We're happy to share his wisdom and everything else on this show. Tee It Up with Keith Jones. We'll be back with the great Bob Toski after this break. And we're back with Bob Toski, the great one. Well, he is the great one now because he's the only great one in that lineage of playing and such. But no, he's great for a number of levels. We've mentioned it in the past, but it's really come more to light because of Obviously, we've lost a lot of World War II guys as they continue up in age. Bob is one of the few remaining veterans, so we always commend him for that service. But beyond that, he has just been a great humanitarian. And I think back to a couple of the stories you told me over the years. This is quite a while back. I'm going to tell start this story and have you finish it up. But you're there, and you get an opportunity to have a golf school. And Golf Digest buys into this idea. I think it's a great idea. So Bob's given lessons. He's getting a little bit better known. Somehow Bob ends up in Japan, and I think it was probably an exhibition. I'll let him pick up the story here just in a second. But then he's Toski-san from that point forward, and they just love him around the world. So Toski-san?
Well, Keith, I think because of my size, being rather small like they are, you know, I think, as you know, Japanese, the height of Japanese people aren't very tall. And I noticed that a lot of them were bow-legged, which is not a good sign for transfer of motion, and weight must move to support motion. And it's very hard for the left and right knee to move properly if you're a little bow-legged. So they were trying to find a golf swing that they could play with, and he comes consistent at, and it was very difficult because they were small, and they couldn't accelerate a lot of speed because golf was not one of the sports that was important. And I found out that when I taught them, they were great students. They listened. They wanted to learn. They wanted to execute properly. But, you know, Keith, and my I hate to say this, but in my years of teaching, about 90% of all my students had poor hand-eye coordination. And if R&D can find a way to do that and can turn a hacker into a scratch player or a low handicapper, and if golf clubs can make a player a better golfer, and then that will be the miracle of golf.
So is it just you're born with it or you're not, or can you develop hand-eye coordination? I think there's certain things you can do to improve some, but I'm not sure you can bring it top level.
Well, you have to go back to the history of what happens in sports. When or even when you're a young kid and you pick up a rock and you throw it into the lake, you throw the rock overhand. Your hands start down by your waistline, and your hands then swing upward and around the back of your neck, and then your hands release the ball overhanded and away from your body and then down toward your body. Now, that is the same thing in baseball. And if you've done that as a habit, that is a movement that creates what we call a slice. And probably 90% of my students were slices because they were swinging overhanded with the golf club, and the club would move across their body. The club face would be open, the ball would go off and curve to the right, and it looked like Magellan. They went halfway around the world. And now you've got to try to get them to strike the ball with the club face squaring up and closing more. You can't shut a shut door. You've got to let it open, square it up, and then close the door. So hand-eye coordination was overhanded, and we were creatures of a habit going overhanded. Now we've got to swing and find the ball with an underhanded blow. Like, I'll give you an example.
Okay, you do that. Let's go to a break, Bob. We're getting ready to go to break. I don't want to cut you short on that more than I'm already cutting him short. With the great Bob Toski, about to give you great advice on the other side of this break. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Bob Toski, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. And we'll be right back. I'll keep my pants on.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga Gunga Galunga.
And we're back to start the second half hour of the show. Hate to interrupt my guests, but sometimes when we have to go to commercial break, we have to go, and I'd rather cut it right there and then come back and say, let's pick it up from where we left off, because, you know, a story from the beginning to the end is much better than a story that starts, ends, and starts and ends. So back to you, Maestro Toski, with your overhand, underhand analogy, which is very interesting already, because I see people slice all the time, but it doesn't look like they're coming with an overhand.
Yeah, they're coming. They may not go as high with the clubhead coming back from the back of their body. They could be more sidearmed, but still the hands are moving away from the body, and they have no conservation of angular momentum. They don't retain the angle longer and release the clubhead later. And if people could only see the great Ben Hogan, and I got photos to prove that. At the point of it, near the point of impact, his the back of his left hand and right, the palm of his right hand, were at right angles to the line of play. And he only had a couple of inches to score that club face. And so therefore, then the right hand had to react a lot faster to catch up to the left and force the left to give way to the right and release the club head. And he then said something in golf that I don't know of any other golf pro that ever said this. He said, "I wish I had two right hands." And his right hand was moving so fast and turning so fast, he felt like he had two right hands because the club, the right hand was creating so much speed through the right wrist and into the forearm. And most golfers dissipate the force, lose the angle. And by the time they get to the ball, the club face is out of position and they have no speed left. And then they try to force and lift the club or force it to get the ball in the air. And that's a tough way to learn how to play golf.
Yeah, absolutely. So all these recreational golfers have taken to the links with little to no training as far as the way to conduct themselves, the quorum, game management, course management, etc. So how do we get around that, and how do people, besides seeing a PGA professional, which we always suggest, how do they improve?
And you have to invest a lot of money with a good instructor and give yourself time, and knowledge is power transmitted into physical energy, and the communication of the knowledge to the student and how to build a golf swing. If he has poor hand-eye coordination, you better start him on the putting green and let him roll the ball and see if he can roll it in the hole from a short distance. And if he can't do that, his hand-eye coordination, as we used to call it, it sucks. And he's got to then learn to roll the ball in the hole to control the club face with his body being quiet. The body doesn't move very much. So then he has to learn to increase the length of the club and then chip the ball in the air and then pitch the ball in the air. And that is the learning process to become a better golfer. It's like going from the first to the second to the third to the fourth to the fifth grade. And you have to pass to promote yourself to the next level. Golf is no different than that. And you got to learn to play golf from the green to the tee, not from the tee to the green. And everybody wants to start with a driver, and then they end up with a putter, but they're putting. It reminds me of the story that these two guys were playing, and they were high handicappers. And they both drove carts by themselves. And one guy would go down a fairway to the left, and the other guy would go down to the right. They would crisscross all the way to the green. Now, there was a par 5 hole, and when they got to the green, this one partner said to his fellow friend, "What did you make on the hole?" And he said, "I made 10. And the other gentleman said, "You won up." So, you know, golf is a leisure sport. It's played on a playground. It's beautiful. You got 18 different holes to try to master, and people want that challenge. And you know, that's what America is all about. It's the independent way of trying to live and make a living, and the ones that are educated the best are the ones that are going to succeed. If you're not well educated in the golf swing, you're not going to be a very good player. But most people go to enjoy their fellowship of their friends, and they all think that they're going to come up with some way of swinging the club, and once they hit that one good shot, they think they've mastered the swing. And of course, golf is a game of a lot of golf swings. I mean, at least if you're a good player, you're going to have to shoot 72 or better, and these guys today are shooting 61s and 60s. It's because they drive the ball so far and they have nothing left of the green. I mean, it's easier to hit a green with a pitching wedge than it is a 1-iron or a 2-iron. And that's almost a lost art today. And I mentioned to you that I made a hole-in-one with a 1-iron, and I was so proud that I made a hole-in-one with considering one of the hardest clubs to use in golf. And I planned to hit a little fade to the green, and I saw the ball go to the left of the flagstick, curve to the right, bounce, and then run. And one of my fellow partners says, "I think your ball went in the hole." Well, that's golf. You mastered the golf swing when you can do that. And today, the game has changed for the professional player, because they're so strong. They're, the average professional is 6 foot tall, weighs 200 pounds. It's flexible, strong, and very adaptable to sensations of swinging the club. They've learned great touch from their fingertips and their hands and arms, and by hitting short shots with less speed, with more loft, and as you go to less loft and more speed with longer clubs, the swing becomes more difficult to control. And that is really the answer to why most golfers do not play better golf, because they don't want to spend the time, they don't want to spend the money. They just want to go out there and put about 5 cans of beers in their golf and their cart and drink and have fun and tell a few lies. And that's what it's all about with golf today, because the equipment, Keith, R&D has not improved the average golfer's ability to play golf with a driver better. And if that's that, their handicap has not changed with all the equipment that they produce to play golf with. So what does that tell you? Their hand and eye coordination still is poor. And how is the golf club going to improve that?
Well, I don't think one irons are even made anymore. I have a couple in my collection, but mostly two irons, and they're not in most bags. Don't play much below a four iron anymore. I was talking to a club pro recently. He's like, yeah, if you got anything below a four iron, just you put it away and get these easier to hit fairway woods or hybrids or what have you, and that'll improve. Prove the game, and it's kind of the way the game is gone. And I think I revert back to the great Lee Trevino, who had a great quote saying to the effect, "Even God can't hit a one iron." So if Bob Toski got a hole in one with a one iron, what's that say about the elevation of one Bob Toski? So there you
probably
go, Toski.
Probably God had something to do with it.
Where was that? Refresh my memory. Where was that?
Riviera Country Club in Coral Gables, Florida.
Riviera in Coral Gables. Okay, nice. So speaking of South Florida, I was fortunate enough to have the great Bob Ford on the show recently. And, of course, everybody has a Bob Toski story. And Bob Ford, obviously the longtime pro and longtime head pro at Oakmont, and then he ended up down in Seminole. So this guy works in Pittsburgh in the summertime and works in South Florida at Seminole in the wintertime. Brilliant man right there, just by doing those two things.
And one of the most respected golf professionals in the game of golf.
Yeah, perhaps ever, really. I defer to you on that, since you know ever.
You can't put me in that category.
No, I'm saying you know ever. So since you've been around so long, I mean, very few people have been thought of to the level of Bob Ford.
Right, I agree.
All right, but he had a Toski story, and it was about Seminole. And apparently you got in to this to watch. You didn't play, but you're watching this member guest or some special tournament that the gates are closed to everybody that's not playing in that tournament. But somehow Toski, all 118 pounds of him, now maybe 126, snuck under the fence or something to get in there. What was the appeal? Why did you want to go?
Why did I want to go?
Yeah, why'd you go? Who were you looking to see?
Well, this was I think you're talking about a pro-am that...
Correct.
That the pros were playing on a Monday, and my niece, Paul Nealon, said, you need to go up to Seminole and meet some of the pros, because with your reputations and your name, I'm sure a lot of them would like to meet you. So Bob Ford allowed me to have a seat between the ninth green and the tenth tee. So they had to walk past me to get to the tenth tee. And I don't know how many of the great pros, McElroy and it was an experience that I got pictures that I can show you when you get back down here for my birthday, but it was an experience that Ford allowed me to have. But I don't think he ever told you the real story about Bob Ford and Bob Toski.
I don't know he did.
For the first time in my life, I was paired with Bob Ford to play 18 holes of golf. And there was a foursome, and we all teed off on the first hole. And as we were walking down to all the drives. There was one ball that was a little bit further than most balls. And Ford was kind of interesting to see who had that drive. And he said to his caddy, whose ball is that up there? And the caddy said, that's Mr. Toski's drive. And I outdrove Bob Ford by 20 yards. And I had more club head speed than he did. He had a nice swing, but he didn't have any club head speed to compress the ball to drive at that distance. And the talk of that was Bob Toski outdriving Bob Ford on the first hole of Seminole.
There you go. No wonder he didn't tell me that story. He wouldn't be, you know, to his credit, and he said that he's still playing, but he's not as consistent as he was, and he's not as long as he was, and such. So to hear that you outdrove him, that's something else. But again, that's not the only person over time that Bob Toski has outdriven. So.
that's correct. And people have no idea how fast my hand and wrist action were at and to and through the ball. And my hand and wrist speed and forearm speed were you can only swing a golf club at a rate of speed in which the strength of your arms and hands can bear. That is a truism. And my little arms and hands and my little body had quick speed. I could run fast. I could turn. If you played me one-on-one in basketball, I could turn and shift. And I was like this guy Curry, but I couldn't dribble as fast as he could. But I could. I had lateral motion, rotary motion, and vertical force. And I could jump and shoot. I could turn and shoot. I could change directions. And I knew then that even then in high school that I had a gift for athleticism.
What he's really saying is Bob Toski, is a dangerous, dangerous man. That's what I just heard. But I know this to be the fact. So.
Well, I think people knew when they played with me that I could play well. And even though I was small, they had that fear that this little guy is a player and a great competitor. And we better be on our game.
That's exactly right. Better be on your game. And Bob's always on his game when he's on this show. He's a regular contributor and just a gem, just a living legend. And so much more. With the great Bob Toski, heading to our final break. We'll be back to wrap up the show with Bob. It is always great to spend time with a great person, and Bob Toski is that person. He is a regular contributor. He is a living legend. He is walking history, and he remembers all of it. That's the crazy stuff when you're talking about Bob Toski, but always giving back, always helping the great game that we love so much, whether it loves us back or not, on a regular basis. It's, you know, it's one of those kind of girlfriends. I don't know. I don't know, Bob.
Well, Keith, you've been very fair and good with me, and you're just a great announcer and a great. You know how to ask the right questions, and you're knowledgeable, and that's important when you're talking to a successful teacher and player. And I respect you for what you do, and. I like you as a person, and I'd love to see you at my birthday party.
Yeah, looking forward to a lot of those things. And I always, you know, I love spending time with you just in general because you just, it's really easy. And, you know, and I have yet to take a lesson from you. I'm not sure I want to go down that road because we've talked about the swing and different things over time and stuff. But you're so easy going. And I know in talking to people that have had lessons from you, that is not the case when you're given a lesson.
No, I'm all business. Because if I romance and make it easy for them to think they can learn how to play golf, I'm a strict fundamentalist, and I can see a lot of problems with the golf swing very quickly, and I try to get the student to understand that there are many different ways of trying to find out how to swing the golf club, but it takes a lot of patience. It takes a desire to want to learn, and you got to love to learn and become a good student of the game. And that's not easy, because once you hear it and then can't do it, and the teacher begins to think of, well, the guy's a basket case. And that's the difference in the psychology of a teacher teaching a student, and he's giving them good advice, but he can't apply it properly.
Yeah, it is a problem. It is, repetition is a problem too, because you've got to know the golf swing. But when you're in the heat of battle, so to speak, when you're on the course, that's not the time to think about the components of the golf swing. You just need to swing. And I see people all the time, and I do it once in a while too, where you have this mental breakdown and then bad results happen.
Well, just remember, the swing is the thing, and if you don't, your ball's gonna sting.
There's been a lot. Yeah, we haven't done the song and dance thing yet, but there's been a lot of musical lyrics that have been said on this show for some reason. The swing is the thing. We know that was a song.
Yeah. And the word swing is the most important thing in golf, but people can't swing the club and apply the swing properly to find the ball. It's that simple.
No, I guess when I see you, I'm going to have to. Hey, take a few minutes and say, you know, show me the way, Sensei, because, you know, yeah. You always think you're doing it right, but until you're outside your body looking at it, and
there you go.
That's the problem. I don't propose to be a teacher. I know enough to be dangerous, which is why it's great getting to do this show, because you get to be just enough on that. And I thank Bob for all the kind compliments. And I do know what I'm doing, on, you know, as far as hosting and asking questions. But the golf swing, I'm really a student of the golf swing. I can help other people, but I can't help myself. And that can be an issue.
That is an issue. Keith, golf is a nonviolent game, played violently from within. Swing within yourself. Find your body control to good balance from footwork to handwork. And the two parts of your body that are most important in golf, your hands and your feet, because something that's touching has more control over something that's not touching. And your body parts, your hips and shoulders and your knees aren't touching anything. Your feet are. Your hands are.
What a way to finish up the show. Oh, man, always great information, wit, and wisdom coming from Bob Toski. We're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. You know Bob wants you to. Practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.